And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I apologize, Carlos. The FIA has informed us that singing Smooth Operator is not allowed due to copyright laws.
No, this is not fair.
It's unacceptable.
The rules. We'll have to find another song for you to sing.
It's unacceptable. Tell them, it is unacceptable.
How are your tires feeling, Carlos?
I don't know. It was...
We have received a 5-second penalty for that.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 29th, 2024. This month will never end. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the Bearded One, a Tough Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Heyo.
Heyo. And last but not least, over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer, J.D.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are. Tonight is the night, everyone. No Dunks taking over the College Park Skyhawks broadcast, 7 p.m. If you're in Atlanta, Peachtree TV, baby, or cpskyhawks.com. And as you know, we're running the ticket charity drive, so for every $20 you donate, you get to send two kids to an upcoming Skyhawks game, give them the experience of a G League game live. So if you have the means, please consider hitting that link in the show notes and donating to a really good cause. And thanks to everybody that's done that already. Are you guys hyped? Are you ready for a little Kobe Bufkin in your lives tonight?
I can't wait to be saying Miles Norris!
I just hope we don't ruin the good vibes around the Skyhawks right now. This team is cruising. They're leading the conference in the G League, and then we're going to come in and wreck it all. Get our stank all over them. Hopefully
we will
not.
Be blamed if it goes poorly tonight.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
But it ain't
going to. No, it's not going to. So we're very excited. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, on tomorrow's No Dunks podcast. Speaking of tickets, there's a few left for our live show in Indianapolis over All-Star Weekend, Friday night, the White Rabbit, just like the game we'll be doing tonight, 7 p.m. start, baby. I don't know when Trey will be singing the anthem at our live show, but we'll check the rundown. And there's like 10 tickets maybe max left. You guys have been gobbling these up. So excited to see everyone there in Indianapolis. But if you're on the fence and you're going to be in the area and you want to come, get it now. They'll be gone, I bet, in an hour.
Yeah, the 10 outstanding tickets. I like that term.
You like that?
They're outstanding. They're good.
Yeah.
Buy them.
Six outstanding.
Uh-oh. Down to
right
six.
Now. Yeah, six.
VIP meet and greet packages
gone.
They gone.
They gone fast. They went, but in about an hour.
Okay.
But,
well,
yeah, six left.
Good consolation here. If you can't come and join us in Indianapolis, get the merch. Ooh. Rep the show.
Yeah.
Walk around your town with your chest puffed out a little bit in this indie No Dunks merch.
Yeah.
Look at this stuff. It's beautiful. It's some of my favorite stuff we've ever made with Breaking Tea. Go to nodunks.com or go to breakingtea.com and search for No Dunks. We've got the t-shirts, the crew necks, the shorts. This is all going to be limited edition stuff. I think you can only buy it up until maybe the show on that weekend. So have at it and go get yourself that. Okay. That's enough housekeeping. We got a lot to talk about because it's Monday. NBA weekend winners and losers. I'm going to get us started here with a big winner. The old guys still got it. We had one of those games. Two of the greatest ever play this thing. They were trying to drag their teams to victory. I'm talking about LeBron James and Steph Curry. We were getting everything in this one from these guys with the step back threes and the fadeaway jumpers and, you know, driving to the rim and some sweet dimes. We had two overtimes between the Lakers and Warriors. And in the end, LeBron makes a pair of free throws with about a second to go to cap off a triple-double, 36 points, a career high, Trey Kirby, 20 rebounds.
That's a lot of roast beef.
LeBeef, and 12 assists as he out-dueled Curry there, who had an incredible performance as well, 46 points on 35 shots, and just like big game-tying shots at the end of regulation or big threes to like put them ahead. But man, Tass, what a game here. Again, between two of the old guys, LeBron and Curry, still a captivating show. I mean, this is like, there, people are saying, still the NBA's best theater when these two are going at it, and there's probably some truth to that.
They're still rivals. Yeah. This was NBA rivalry week at its finest. This was a great game on ABC to headline Saturday night, that's for sure. Yep. The Warriors got to be hurting a little bit. Two straight games that seemed extremely winnable that went down to the wire, double overtime here, and against the Kings went down to the last second. They went to a new starting lineup. Draymond Green finally starting for the first time since he punched Yusuf Nurkic. It's been a while since he's been in the starting lineup. Alongside the guys that they've been asking for, Jonathan Kuminga and Andrew Wiggins beside him. And to me, Wiggins looked as much as the old Wiggins, the good Wiggins that helped them get to a finals championship that I've seen in a long time. He was going right at LeBron as much as possible, trying to score on him. He blocked LeBron one great time. Best defensive possessions were like one time where he guarded D'Angelo Russell basically near midcourt for about 8-10 seconds, and that resulted in a bad possession for the Lakers because Wiggins was getting after it. Now, he could have won this game with two missed free throws, a minute and a half left in the fourth quarter. He did miss those, and he missed a shot, just a tip shot a little bit later, but 22 from Wig, three threes, a couple steals and a block, and the first time this new offense is starting together with Jonathan Kuminga, also 22 points, 22 from both of them to go along with Draymond Green, the guy who needs to be starting. They finally said, all right, you're in there. And it was really fun.
But not enough. Two games in a row, like you said, just coming up short. I mean, again, Curry, the heroics, like the game tying layup at the end of regulation, putting 80 in the blender was pretty special. And then inside the final minute of overtime, he forced a turnover, then hit a massive three in the second overtime. You know, he's hitting another deep bomb. But, you know, it was LeBron, AD, D'Angelo Russell, timely threes from this guy in overtime to get the victory. But your thoughts, TK?
Yeah. I mean, the move at the end of regulation by Steph. Was it a smitty? He comes like all the way underneath the rim, drags Anthony Davis out with him to about the free throw line, and then crosses over while dribbling back towards half court. That was crazy. You can understand why AD would be left in the dust. Great finish by Curry. He got the double bang in double OT from Breen. I thought that was great. And then, yeah, you mentioned it. D'Angelo Russell, he's having himself a nice little stretch here. Was pretty good in this game. 28 points. You did get the full D'Lo experience, I thought. In second overtime, 2 minutes left, almost turns the ball over. Somehow ends up in Anthony Davis's hands for a dunk. Then he does turn the ball over on the next two possessions, but it doesn't matter. He's still got the confidence to chuck the three from deep. Ice in the veins, absolutely, from D'Angelo Russell. He does not want to be traded from this team, and he's playing really, really well right now. And the Lakers need his outside shooting. They need his playmaking. They need somebody besides LeBron to do anything. But Draymond Green, I thought, was awesome. Plus 31 in this game, a double overtime game. And it was kind of the Draymond that has been missing since his suspension. Mm-hmm. He was quite animated. There's that great moment with Jared Vanderbilt calling for a replay. And then Draymond's like, are you really on a replay? I thought he was on point. The Warriors are finally starting all their best players, which I think is good. But they should start winning some games because they're in 12th place. Three games out of the play-in tournament right now. These close losses are killers.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much just this first 45 games of the season just wears on them for the last part of the season. But if they're playing their best players, they're going to be playing better. And they will probably catch somebody in the play-in tournament standings right now. But it's just tough not to start Draymond Green and play him a lot. He had 11 assists in this one. Everything sort of goes through him. Back-to-back games with 11 assists, plus 31 in his minutes, as you mentioned, Trey. But just horrible when he sat. That's the problem. That's why they lost this game, is when he sat, they were ridiculously bad. But even though their schedule is kind of tough to come up, or coming up here, it's difficult. They still look a lot better. Like when they take on the 76ers, will Joel Embiid play on Tuesday night in a nationally televised game? They feel so much better because they are playing their best players, because they trust in Kuminga. And I think there is an effect, a trickle-down effect from Draymond Green to Andrew Wiggins, who looks like Wiggy. A little bit.
And because it's a Laker game, we have to talk a little bit about the free throw discrepancy. Steve Kerr, after the game, said, quote, "I might comment on the free throws that they shot, but my mom is here right now. And I want to be on my best behavior, so I'm not going to comment on their 43 free throws to our 16.
Yeah, but you just did,
I'm
Steve.
I'm not going to comment on Steph shooting 3 free throws in 43 minutes.
But you just did, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. Tongue-in-cheek comment there from Steve after the game. But look, I mean, it is how the Lakers play compared to how the Warriors play. That is a glaring discrepancy. We've seen this, you know, for a couple of years, obviously, with the Lakers. But definitely a foul at the end where LeBron was attacking, again, one of the oldest guys in the league, And just like, you know, just driving, barreling to the rim by guys half his age and way more athletic and obviously hit the free throws to ice it.
Yeah, I mean, you would love to see him make the layup and then knock down the free throw so it doesn't come down to free throws. But that's just how the Lakers are. They're in the lane all the time. Yeah. They draw a lot of fouls. They shoot a lot of free throws. And the Warriors are kind of the opposite. They're going to play more on the perimeter, and they foul all the time. Mm-hmm. That has been a problem for the Warriors for a long time, just like their turnovers have been. At this point in the Warriors' era, they just can't overcome all of the tiny, tiny mistakes that they make.
Yeah, and, you know, as Marcus Thompson II wrote for The Athletic, I saw in writing about this game over the weekend, quote, it will be a decade this coming February since LeBron's buzzer-beating three against the Warriors at the Oracle, and he debuted the silencer celebration and sparked this duo into must-watch theater. He's talking, of course, of LeBron and Steph. And, you know, you don't want to take it for granted. You do not know how many more we have of these left in the bag. I don't want to get all KOC on you, but don't take these guys for granted. And these performances and these games, and it is weird where their teams are in the standings. It's like, they need a 36-point triple-double from LeBron. They need Steph Curry to go for 45-plus. And obviously, in one of their cases, even that's not enough. As they try and drag their teams like into play-in games or into the playoffs or just to survive. but still, that was awesome stuff there on Saturday night.
I love the fact that we had NBA rivalry week here with two teams that aren't rivals. I mean, yeah, LeBron is there and Curry is there just to be able to say, oh, our two best guys are playing here on Saturday night. The most popular sport in America, NFL, is, you know, it's dwindling down. Hey, guys, come on over. Or at least if you're not watching right now, remember, your sport is ending now. Come on over soon.
Look at this sport.
Yeah, there were a lot of games. Listen, NBA Rivalry Week probably didn't get a lot of numbers per se, but they're obviously putting games on national TV just to push it as much as possible. Yeah. And it was, overall, it was good. They're trying to give juice to games in January.
Like January juice.
Yeah, just like they did with the in-season tournament. They're trying to do it a little bit, and it works to a degree. But rivals is always a funny term, because the Nuggets were scheduled to play the Sixers. They played on Saturday. Are they rivals? Nah. Well, but they're the best players supposed to be playing
player
against each other.
Player versus player rival.
Player rivalries. Yes.
But not really, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Well,
speaking of the in-season tournament, I did have a laugh because you're seeing in a couple of places LeBron has the first 30-20 game for the Lakers since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I saw Anthony Davis do it in December. 40-20.
No, you didn't.
But you can't find it on Basketball Reference.
No, he didn't.
It's not there. It's
disappeared.
It's gone, man.
It's gone.
It's absolutely gone. All right, let's keep it going here. So that was a winner. LeBron versus Curry. Trey, who do you have on your list?
I got the San Antonio Spurs.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the double digits win club, San Antonio. Two wins over the weekend. They beat the Blazers on Friday. Victor Wembanyama, 23 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Cool. The best stuff was on Saturday, though. They beat the Timberwolves in a back-to-back. Pretty nice. Victor Wembanyama in this one, 23 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and the tallest sham god in the history of basketball. Hit one on Rudy Gobert. Looked so smooth. The finish, ball never comes back to his left hand after he hits the sham god with his right hand, just flicks it up over Gobert. You see the over-the-top slow-mo video of it, and it looked to me like all of those House of Highlights videos that are going around of kids like in their living room filming in slow-mo with a tiny basketball, and they're just doing the craziest shots and the craziest layups, and you're like, oh, this looks so poetic. Mm-hmm. It happened in an NBA game with like the two tallest dudes in the league. That was so cool. Great shot making down the stretch, I thought, from San Antonio as well. Jeremy Sohan was attacking mismatches, hitting tough shots in the lane. Dude's not a point guard, but he's a pretty solid player. Still shooting 38% from three, even with a very weird jumper. I'm impressed by that. Devin Vassell hit three really tough shots over defense as well. And then Wemby hit a three with 2 minutes left. He did go 0 for 2 at the line with a minute remaining. That really would have sealed this one. But Keldon Johnson got a big offensive rebound, 9 seconds left, made a free throw, and then played pretty solid defense on Minnesota on their final possession. Great weekend for the Spurs, I thought.
Absolutely. I've watched that Shamgod move probably 20 times. To do it to Rudy Gobert was extremely cool. To have a 7'5 guy do that was extremely cool against former Defensive Player of the Year, which was awesome. And the way he stepped into that three-pointer that he hit with a couple minutes left, he dribbled down and stepped into it. This guy can do it all. He's a wonderful, wonderful player. And Sohan has changed position from starting point guard to a wing, and it helps a lot. He gets after it. So the team is starting to look like more of a team.
I'm glad you brought up Keldon Johnson, man. That guy's been on a milk carton this year.
Yeah.
I barely said his name. This guy was like on an Olympic team. He was scoring 22 a game. And, he comes off the bench a lot of the times. So the numbers have not been all that impressive, but played well down the stretch there. But just a guy, it's like, oh, yeah. He's like still a 24-year-old, young, promising guy, but it's like sort of got lost in the shuffle here this season, I'd say. And then, of course, we had once again a loose bat.
The return of the Batiote. Yes. Amazing stuff. We've seen bats get loose in San Antonio's arena quite a few times in the past.
Yeah.
Manu Ginobili was on hand for this one, famously smacked a bat out of midair on Halloween, I think.
Yep.
And then this. We had the Coyote dressed in his Batman gear running around like crazy. They gave the Bat-Yote a long time to catch this bat.
Totally.
Is this the whole plan?
Well,
Nobody else came out.
Are also saying like, okay, so Wembanyama at some point, it's really early in the game, sees the bat, And then it feels like 20 seconds later, the Spurs mascot, dressed as Batman, is screaming out with the net to catch it. And everyone's like going like, hold on. Is this all planned? Is this a complete bit? Like, do they unleash the bat for him to go get? It is. It's perplexing. I mean, maybe they saw it earlier, and I'm sure he just has to put, obviously a thing on his head in the back there.
Just go to the back.
It happens really quick. But that's a great point. It's like, at some point, like, if you can't catch it, does he just, okay, sorry, hey, bye.
Maybe later. Bit over, time to play again.
But he got it.
But did it take him that long with the actual fishnet in hand? It felt like 20 seconds that he had like three swipes at it.
Yeah.
And he went, strike one, strike two, and then bang.
Yeah.
He hit it. He dropped the fishnet and walked off like he was dropping a microphone. I'm done here. That was nice. That was a nice moment. So it did feel a little scripted, a little staged.
I know. It's
but
like,
he did it, man.
Yeah, they just know what to do. The world's largest bat colony, right. Bracken Cave, is just outside of San Antonio, which is why you only see bats at Spurs games. And maybe they have a second step to their plan. Like, if the Bat-Yote can't get it after 5 minutes, they call in the experts. I don't know. Hopefully we never have to get to that.
They're going on their rodeo trip pretty soon, where the rodeo takes over in San Antonio. Do the bats join that as well? Are they part of the rodeo?
Do the bats bother the horses?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Do they ride the horses?
That's
do
one
they
of the
jump
events.
On?
You got to lasso a bat? Oof.
That would be tough.
Yeah, very.
All right, so the Spurs, a winner of the weekend.
Yeah,
I like that
stuff.
One.
10 wins, man.
10 wins.
Did it.
Hey, there's some bad teams in
that's
this
right.
league, so they're not even the fifth worst team. Tass, who do you got for a winner of the weekend?
I got the Indiana Pacers. They had 2 wins without Tyrese Haliburton. They beat the Phoenix Suns and then the Grizzlies, and they beat the Suns with Devin Booker scoring 62 points in that game. He scored 62, and the Pacers were still able to win. Last couple seconds, Devin Booker tried to win it. He had an opportunity. They inbounded him the ball. He actually fell and then got up, shot. Aaron Nesmith doing a decent job of being in the way, and he fell again. Booker looking for a foul call after falling again. I think they did the right thing by not calling it. But wild that they won this, and they won it because they beat Phoenix in the fourth quarter. Pacers just come alive. They get gritty. They won 28-17 in that fourth quarter. And I mentioned Aaron Nesmith because he was supposed to guard Devin Booker for much of this night. Booker scored 62. But Nesmith was trying. And that's why I bring up Aaron Nesmith, because he gets under people's skin. And that's what this Pacers team needs to balance their Tyrese Halliburtons and their three-point shooters. And he got under Devin Booker's skin so much that Devin Booker gave him an elbow below the belt. Right to the Hibberts.
Oh, wow.
But he did say that it wasn't on purpose, but Aaron Nesmith was doing great things in this game. The fourth quarter, he had a great chase down block of Devin Booker, going from end to end where he was just following Devin Booker, then he blocked him, then he took a charge, a minute 45 left. I just bring him up because I don't know how this guy got this good. He was sort of on the peripheral part of the Boston Celtics rotation for 2 years to start his career. Now with the Pacers, he's their starting small forward. But the guy that he gave it to at the end of this game to win it was Andrew Nembhard, who's taken over for Tyrese Haliburton. As he's been out, he had 6 straight points, 22 points, 8 assists overall. So those two guys at 6'5", I think will be starting beside Tyrese Haliburton when he comes back. 3 6'5ers, Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner. But Nembhard, even though he's a backup point guard, he's just the perfect balance. Again, he plays hard on defense. He can also shoot threes. So it's going to be interesting to see who they play beside him. And to speak of Pascal Siakam, you know, since the trade, they're only 3-3, but they're 3-2 without Haliburton. He had 31 against the Suns because that's what he does. And then they beat the Grizzlies without Miles Turner and Haliburton. Now, Siakam obviously plays on both ends, and that's why this team is a little bit more balanced. He had a triple-double against Philly the day before Phoenix, back-to-back games that Phoenix Suns was. So yeah. They've won 3 in a row, 3-3 since the trade. Haliburton only played in one of those, and it was a loss. So they're 3-2 without him. I called them a winner last week, coming off 2 losses. People were ridiculing me. What are you doing? The first 2 games after Siakam was traded, because they look great when they have their guys out there. When Siakam played with Haliburton, they've only played 1 game together, but they were awesome. They're like plus 26 when those two guys played together. So now it's a locked up 4-5-6 in the Eastern Conference. It's Knicks, Cavs, Pacers right now. Those three teams behind the Celtics, Bucks, and 76ers, they look locked in. It looks like those six teams, you know, the Knicks are coming for those Sixers, but those six teams look legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, after they got Siakam, yeah, you're right. They had that sort of surprising, I guess, loss to the Blazers. That was the one that Haliburton did play, though they look great. Then they lost to the Suns, okay, in Phoenix. Then they lost to the Nuggets, great team. And it was like, are they going to win a game with Siakam here in the lineup? And you're right. Then they beat Philly, beat Phoenix, beat Memphis. Those two are coming over the weekend. That's 3 games in 4 nights, if I'm keeping track correctly. That's not never easy. And awesome. Like, once Haliburton is back with this team, what I love about that, what you said, those the 4-5-6 there is like, these teams all are convinced we can win a playoff series or two, depending on matchups. Like, that's not, nobody's happy to be there, I feel, with these squads, especially after Indy made that aggressive trade as we got closer to the deadline and getting a star in Siakam. So, good weekend. I had them on my short list as well, just the way they racked up those wins, especially that one against Phoenix where, you know, Booker had 62, but they got it done in the end.
Yeah, the Pacers aren't ever going to be good at defense, but bringing in Siakam with Nesmith there, with Nembhard getting some more minutes, they're at least a little bit more resistance, I think. They are 19th in the league in defensive rating in the past 6 games, basically since Siakam has been there. Like, that feels like a ceiling to me, probably defensively for the Pacers, but when you can pair it to 28th, 29th, 30, like, that is more reasonable and gives you a little bit of hope going forward that maybe we can continue to be competitive when the games really, really matter, because despite their mastery of the Milwaukee Bucks in the regular season, you're probably still taking the Bucks if they end up meeting up in the playoff. But if this team has figured out a way to give some resistance defensively and then stay awesome on offense, that's great. But we need to get Haliburton back, because this guy's got the craziest fits, man.
Oh, I know.
He's just like Dick Tracy over the weekend.
He's getting crazier and crazier.
It's wild stuff.
What I love about the Pacers, too, now that they have their top-end talent and their two guys, Haliburton and Siakam, like you said it, you know, Nesmith, great in the Suns game, obviously tried his best, at least on Booker defensively on some of those possessions. But like, what I like about Indiana is, like, on any given night, it's a Mathurin game or it's an Obi Toppin game in the one against Phoenix. I mean, you know, Johnny on the spot, he was in the right place for like that little putback, but he had a great game, 23-11 from him. You know, Nembhard will have these big games. It's like, they have so many guys where it's like, you don't know who's going to be the third or fourth star on that night, and they can sort of rotate, and they don't have to get it consistently from one guy every single game. So that's a dangerous team when you have guys. I mean, Buddy Hield will have a night where he'll hit 7 threes, or Miles Turner will have a huge game. So yeah, it's a good roster.
And yeah, Pascal Siakam came over, and he's clearly the number two guy, and he was fine doing that against the Phoenix Suns, even without Haliburton in that game. He scored and scored and scored in the last few possessions of the fourth quarter. He said, somebody else can do it. So they have a balance. He feels comfortable in a different way than he was with the Raptors, where as soon as Kawhi left, oh yeah, it's Pascal's time. And things didn't go, obviously, all that well. But this Pacers team is just built differently, where he can be a number two guy. And then there's just a bunch of scrappy guys. With Aaron Nesmith, he is going to piss somebody off on the other team. In a good way, because he does that for his team. So to go along with Nembhard and Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam, who plays defense, those four guys, if they're starting alongside Tyrese Haliburton, I mean, it just sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
And so this team is going to be tough. And the interesting thing is with Tyrese Haliburton coming back for that one game, that was coming off a hamstring injury. So everybody thought, okay, he's coming back. But then he sat the last five games since coming back. So unfortunately, it must have aggravated a little bit more that it's bugging him. But he also wants to play in the All-Star game at home in Indiana, I'm sure. So they're getting him as fresh as possible. But
and he may have pushed it to try and play in Siakam's debut with the team and all of that. But maybe it came back to bite them in the ass. But yeah, they're doing all right, racking up victories here. Let's do a whole other round of winners of the weekend. We'll move some pace here. This happened, I feel like, 10 days ago at this point. But Luka had 73 points over the weekend. We're counting Friday night as the weekend. Career high, Mavericks franchise record. Also the most points scored by an NBA player since the late Kobe Bryant's 81-point game back in 06. Yeah, Luka with 73 versus the Atlanta Hawks. And he only joins Wilt Chamberlain, who did it a couple times. Obviously, his most famous game, the 100-point game. Kobe 81, and then David Thompson also had 73. And then the discourse from this game was sort of insane. Like, it was all like, well, the NBA sucks. There's no defense. It's not that impressive. I mean, this is like notable on-air personalities shitting on a guy for scoring 73 points. Yeah, it's against the Hawks. They're not a great defensive team. Yeah, you're going to see one or two highlights from that game where it's like, oh, not a lot of resistance
just,
there for
just
Atlanta.
A waltz down the lane.
But 90% of his other buckets and the defense he was seeing, I thought were pretty impressive. The Atlanta trying to switch things up. The guy was just unreal. And in my opinion, should be applauded, and we should be like, wow, I mean, Embiid just did it. Wow, now 73. But instead it turned into like, this isn't that impressive. This sucks. What's your takeaway from all this?
Well, it's the toughest time to defend in NBA history right now. It's difficult. You can't body guys the same way, and obviously you've got the most skilled players in league history.
Right. And everybody can shoot and all that, yeah.
Yeah, so I understand people looking at it from especially guys who used to play the game, and then they see 70 from Embiid, 73 from Luka Doncic, 62 from Booker, 62 from Kat, all within a week and a half. They say, oh, come on, play some defense. Well, listen, you can't play the same way. Like, you can't be a Gary Payton and tug on a guy's forearm anymore when he has the ball. You just can't. You can't do that anymore, so it's difficult. Every coach is saying, this is the toughest time to ever play defense in the NBA. So it's different. So guys are going
to
score.
Do you think Luka, we need to consider rule changes? And to give like a little more...
Scoring is good. But yeah, I think when it comes to the playoffs, you can get a little more physical.
Okay.
I don't know, change the rules.
Hand-checking, whatever. To obviously
sucks.
Try and balance things out for the defense to play a little bit of defense.
Yeah, play defense. Like, touching is allowed on defense. But then it can be called for a foul. I don't know, the hand-checking is a little too far, I think. They needed Wesley Matthews out there.
Okay.
They're old legend.
Get out of here.
I'm not letting
you take us on a Wesley Matthews tangent here.
Oh, come on.
Come on,
you
man.
You love a Wesley Matthews tangent.
What year of Wesley Matthews?
Yeah. No, he can't play this year. He's too old. But he is on the Hawks roster. They tried
a time machine and Wesley Matthews maybe could have slowed Luka, I guess, on Friday.
They tried. Sadiq Bey, come on. Come on, I'm part of the Bay Hive, but come on. He can't guard. Jalen Johnson was trying out there. DeAndre Hunter would have helped, but he's injured. So all that to say, it's a good time to watch the NBA. Lots of scoring. I mean, that's it.
Trey, takeaways from Luka's 73 and what happened after this game of people talking about, there's no defense. Is this all that impressive? I don't think so. You know, that's what people were saying.
There was a baseball season recently where there was like 5 no-hitters in the first month of the season. Everybody's like, oh, this sucks. Too many no-hitters. Don't you like the sport you're watching?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I feel about it. Yeah, it's weird that we had 2 guys score 70 in a week and 4 guys score 70 in a year. But that's 4 games out of how many that have happened. It is easier to score. There are more possessions. Yeah. This guy missed 8 shots in a game. 25 for 33. Some of it was bad defense. Absolutely. There's the one clip going around where Luka gets Jalen Johnson on his back and Jalen just basically walks into the rim.
Yes.
Hey, look, smart screen by Rashawn Holmes inside to keep Luka's momentum going there. But there's also so many plays where Jalen Johnson is almost doing too much defensively, jumping at every pump fake, every pass fake. and just being out of position. Luka was taking advantage of it and obviously was feeling it. He had, what, 65 through three quarters?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive, no matter what the defense is.
Right.
Also, all of these games with these high-scoring numbers, everything over 60, has been against the worst teams in the NBA this season, the worst defensive teams in the league. Like, Giannis had 64 against the Pacers. They're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. 73 against the Hawks. They're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. There are teams that do play defense out there, but it wasn't the Hawks on this night. So I think KOC it here and just don't take these 70-point games for granted, Skeets. They're still pretty rare to come across, but we're getting 100 at some point in our lives. We're going to see it.
While we're doing the show, we'll get 100?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, well.
It feels like there's never been 2 70-point games within a week before. Like, we had 2 70-point games last season, but they're pretty far apart. They're like 6 weeks apart or whatever. Like, I think the reason why all these former NBA players were pissed off and said, come on, play some defense. I don't think we've ever seen two games like that before in a week. Like, it just happened so it just happened all together.
Will probably did it twice in a week way back in the day. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's just because they're so close to each other.
But you could be like Kevin Durant, who heard that Joel Embiid had 70, and he said, what? 70? Like, that is hard to do.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest scorers. He's one of the greatest scorers of all time, and even he's going, that's fucking incredible. That's very difficult to do in this league.
Yeah. Exactly. So last year we had 4 60-point games, you know, 270s and 260s, so 460-plus. We've already done that in a week now, 10 days.
Right.
So it's happening more, that's for sure. It was surprising. Like, Dame had 70, and Donovan Mitchell had 70 last year, and Luka and Dame also had 60-point games in other games. But we're going to pass that. There was only 460-point
games. We literally sat here and said after Embiid went for 71, we're like, well, somebody else is going to do that this year. Because what was even shocking was it was a big guy doing that. It's like these guys on the wing and the perimeter, you had the three-point shot and all that. It's like you're going to get up there even quicker. And that was the crazy takeaway from this. It wasn't like he didn't hit 14 three-pointers. He hit a lot. Okay, he hit, what, 8 in the end?
Yeah.
But it was like, it was just pure buckets. Like, he was just on fire from everywhere. It wasn't just relying on the three or a bunch of free throws. It was to get to 70, you need a bit of everything. You need the three, you need the line, and then you need everything else going. But, man, what a game. I wish I went down to the Fortress. That was my biggest regret. I was like, damn, could have seen that in person.
Mm. Yeah.
So now you got to go to every NBA game because there's somebody could be going for 70-plus.
And then there was a game winner last night at the Fortress.
I know.
Great weekend. Great weekend down at the Fortress. As for me, I was playing Elden Ring Friday night. I got my endgame shield and my endgame sword. So, you know, we're all winning.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
What do you think about players showing off their points on a piece of paper? What a cute tradition.
I love it. Yeah, I always judge the penmanship. Like, because I never think the player's doing it. It's somebody's doing
it. Yeah, who did that?
Some assistant coach or someone on the staff. And I thought Luka's, whoever did it for Dallas, was some of the best. They had the right pen. I thought it was a little thicker than normal. Mm-hmm. Just like Embiid's was just a straight-up Bic pen, you know? Like, they had to squint sort of to see it. Yeah, anyway. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm a fan of it. I mean, I think it has to be over 70 at this point.
That's the minimum, it seems.
That's the minimum.
You can't do it for 60. Yeah.
Has anybody ever done it for a game under 70? I don't think so. Not that I remember.
Not that I can remember.
Michael Jordan didn't do it at 69. I remember that. But I don't think so. Yeah, 70 or plus.
Yeah.
Because Book did it at 70, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 70 is the minimum.
I don't think you should be able to, I don't think you should do it in a loss either, but that's a whole other argument. I mean, for the Booker one back in the when he lost to the Celtics.
Because
that was a big what they had, like the big group photo. 70 point. It's like, guys, you lost. I mean, I get it, but I don't know. Okay, so we used to do who's gonna score 50. I mean, I guess now it's like we might as well just get to the point like who's gonna break Kobe's record.
Okay.
Right?
So good,
like, I mean, I don't know if it happens this year, but it feels like it's gonna happen outside of rule changes in the next couple seasons. Who? You gonna call your shot?
Kevin Durant.
Wow.
Doesn't have a 70-point game yet.
Wow, I like it.
As if that's something that needs to be done. That's expected part of NBA superstardom now.
Head.
Oh, never had a 70? Come on.
You want to call your shot? Who's getting...
Nobody. Nobody's going to score 80 this season.
It's true.
We said it last year here after 2 70-point games. Who else is going to score 70? Nobody. So we might get one more 70, maybe.
Give me Booker. I'll go Booker. This guy's on fire right now. Just all coming in losses.
Yeah, he definitely is on fire.
Okay, who else you got for a win of the weekend?
LA Clippers, yep. Winner of the weekend. They won both their games. Started a 7-game road trip on Friday against the Raptors. Pretty easy one for them. And then got the best win of the weekend, I would say, on Saturday, going to Boston on the second night of a back-to-back and really taking it to the Celtics, their second straight loss at home, both against championship contenders they could potentially meet up against.
Yeah.
It was a 21-0 run in the third quarter that blew this game open for LA. They were in transition the entire night. Only 11 turnovers for Boston, but somehow still 26 fast break points for the Clippers. Poor floor balance on the Celtics side of things, and the Clippers were just making it a point. Every miss, we're going the other way. They looked like the much faster, more athletic team against the Celtics. Boston couldn't get inside. They were definitely missing Porzingis. I thought only 48 points in the paint for Boston. Shot 43% on twos. They just didn't have the easy offense of having a 7-3 guy that can shoot over people. So they were missing them there. And then the Clippers, very unselfish. 5 players in double digits, 28 assists. If you're open right now, you're getting the ball. James Harden did not have a good game, but he had 11 assists. He was smiling, running the court. I think his only 2 baskets were in fast break as well. L.A.? 1 game out of the first seed in the Western Conference right now.
That's amazing. This is literally the way they beat the Boston Celtics. It felt like this could be an NBA Finals, the way they're playing. And plus, they kind of mirror each other in that they switch everything on defense. And that's exactly what the Clippers are doing. So the Celtics couldn't score. They were missing layups. They definitely missed open shots in this one. But to allow all those transition buckets when they are the number one transition team was because, they had the poor floor balance, you're right. They were kind of going for balls on offensive rebounds or steals where there weren't guys back, so the Clippers just ran it out, and they're playing great defensively, some deflections. And so the Celtics did miss open shots, but to go from 20-0 to start at home to 2 straight losses, it's hard. It must be heartbreaking for them. But the Clippers are just... they're for real. It looks like they're for real.
Every day it feels like the Clippers are like, convincing a doubter or a hater that they might be for real, like you're saying. Haven't got me yet. Mm-hmm. But, man, every game you see them more and more, you're like, oh, god damn, yeah. If they're there, they could be a finals team or a championship team even. But 30 wins now. There's only a handful of teams at 30 wins right now. It's a 30-plus. Celtics, Bucks, Thunder, Wolves, Nuggets are there, and then the Clippers. We got Philly and New York knocking on the door as well. But L.A., man, probably going to have 2 All-Stars on Thursday night announced if Kawhi and Paul George are there. They got a brand-new arena coming. They're playing the best they've played in a long time. I mean, we haven't heard a whisper of any, like, James Harden's upset or Westbrook's upset. Like, nothing. Not a single peep. From this team. They just continue to rack up victories.
They got depth. And Zubats has been hurt, but they're playing with 2 bigs. One they got for free with Daniel Theis, just scrap pile. Were able to get him after he was released. He's been huge for them to go along with Mason Plumlee. All good.
Who else you got, just quickly?
I got Kyle Lowry because he's on vacation, baby. Okay, he's not actually on vacation, but he doesn't have to play basketball right now, which is awesome for him because the Charlotte Hornets made a trade for him. And they have said, Mitch Kupchak, their GM, said the team has no plans to bring Kyle Lowry to Charlotte before the trade deadline as he looks to get something in return. The Kupchak and the Hornets are looking to trade him for something. And if not, we're probably going to buy him out. So Kyle Lowry, that's a good life.
Just gets you're to chilling. Rest.
Yeah, to get ready to be on a team that has playoff aspirations. That's where he's going to be. He's going to be not only playoff aspirations, but to be really good. Somebody will go get him. There's no doubt. He's had a good year overall. Obviously, he was the backup guard to a team that went to the finals last year with the Miami Heat, where he was scorching. He shot really well from 3-point line. So where does he go? Does he go back to be with his old coach, Nick Nurse, that he won a championship with in Philadelphia? Take over Patrick Beverley's backup job? I don't know. Maybe. Or the Lakers that everybody is wanting him to go to. There's where all the rumors go to. They almost traded for him years ago to be their starting guard. That could be it. Although Evan Turner, former NBA player Evan Turner, doesn't like the idea of Kyle Lowry going to the Lakers. He tweeted, "Kyle, do not go to the Lakers. They are trying to make you the fall guy. Think about your legacy." Relax, Evan Turner. He just wants to play basketball. He could be playing for a Lakers team that has LeBron and Anthony Davis that has aspirations of winning the freaking title. So if he gets to go play, it starts to make sense when you watch D'Angelo Russell. Okay, you're going to be the scoring guy. Kyle Lowry will come off the bench and be the defender guy gets everybody involved, plays defense. It sort of makes sense there, the way D'Angelo Russell is playing. Because Kyle Lowry will be the third guy in terms of scoring when he's out there with LeBron, Anthony Davis. Anyways, it makes logical sense, and it makes sense to get rest before both, February, March, April, to get ready. Yeah, he had a bad few games before he got traded.
Yeah.
But this year he has been shooting 38.5% from three. Like, he is shooting the ball well because he's a friggin' champ and a potential Hall of Famer. So he's got it. He's got it made.
Final winner of the weekend before we take a quick break. The Detroit Pistons. They stunned OKC. They beat them 120-104 over the weekend, handing the Western Conference leading Thunder their second worst loss of the season. This is the Pistons, and a big part of it was Jalen Duren. 22 points, 9 of 13 shooting, a career high, I should say, 21 rebounds.
That's a lot of roast beef.
And 6 assists for him, which is he really wanted to make note of. I love that. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get 20 and 20s in my career. Will I have many games where I get 6 assists? Maybe not so much, but he played awesome. He had a career-high 9 of Detroit's 15 offensive rebounds. That was a big reason they won this game. But Detroit gets their 6th win of the season. I say they're a winner because it's looking very unlikely that they're going to set the all-time record for fewest amount of wins in a season, full season. The Sixers hold that with 9. The Bobcats have 7, but that was the shortened season. And win percentage, loss percentage, whatever you want to look at it. Obviously, the Bobcats was the worst. But the Pistons are going to clear. I think they're going to clear 10 wins here. They're going to be okay in that department. And look, big game in the Nut Dust Bowl race, too. Because Detroit's at 6 wins. We got the Wizards at 8. Wizards did beat the Pistons over the weekend. That was a big one. And then the Hornets are still there. They have 10, too, as they are... struggling as well. So it's still on, guys. It's a 4-game gap between your Pistons and your Hornets, and I'm stuck in the middle with the Zards.
Yeah, but the Pistons are peaking. 3 wins in January. Yeah, meanwhile, the Hornets are getting worse. They just traded Terry Rozier. They got other guys that are potentially being shipped out. It's coming down to the last season. Just imagine the players that are going to be playing for these teams the last week of the season. Names we can't even come up with.
Yeah.
Names you couldn't even create on NBA 2K. Yeah. They're going to get triple doubles in the last week of the season.
Yep.
Yeah, and the Hornets will probably trade basically everybody who is their quote-unquote best players other than LaMelo Ball on their team.
Kyle Lowry's available, I heard.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry's available. Gordon Hayward's available.
Hornets legend.
The Peege Washington is available, but they look terribly bad in every...
Peege had a big game this weekend.
Yeah, and they look bad in every single one of their games, in all honesty. they're getting spanked. And they got beat by the Pistons a little bit earlier. Although, I will say that Brandon Miller looks good.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fun to see.
Big
but Jalen Duren looks awesome, too. Like he gets the ball in the mid-range. It kind of reminds me of DeAndre Ayton. And you think, what's he going to do with that thing? But then he shoots it, and then he scores it.
Not a comparison you want to hear, though.
Hey, DeAndre Ayton is a max player. Have you heard?
Yeah.
But anyways, Jalen Duren is coming into his own second-year player here in the NBA. Like, he looks good.
Jalen Duren's got snow tires, though, for sure.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah.
He lives in Detroit. Yeah,
got to.
He looks good. I'm a big fan of his, and that was a nice win and led by him. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to a quick batch of NBA weekend losers. Don't go anywhere.
I got to get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. Designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nodunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/nodunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, we're here in the Classic Factory. We went very long on NBA weekend winners, so we'll move with a little more pace here for weekend losers, or at least to fewer of them. Trey, you get us started. Who was your big NBA weekend loser?
Julius Randle, biggest loser of the weekend, because it feels like the Knicks are going to be losing him for a little bit of time here. He dislocated his right shoulder against the Heat on Saturday, driving to the hoop. Jaime Jaquez Jr. tries to take a charge on him. Randle, doing what he always does, tries to finish over and through the contact. Tough fall, basically catches himself and dislocated his shoulder on the landing. So he's out tonight against the Hornets. Oh, yeah, baby. But we're still waiting on MRI results to see what the full extent of this injury is going to be for Julius Randle. I saw Fred Katz was getting very upset. People asking him for the results about the MRI, saying, I don't have it yet, people. I haven't seen the charts. I'm not holding out on you, but the info will be coming. The silver lining, I suppose, for the Knicks, they did beat the Heat in this game, used a huge fourth quarter run. Jalen Brunson, obviously great in this one. OG Anunoby was good. And then Quentin Grimes added as well, in the fourth quarter against the Heat. 12-2 now are the Knicks with OG in the lineup. Bad timing, though, I think, with Randle.
Yeah.
We'll see how long he's going to be out, but it could run into the All-Star game. It feels like he's on basically everybody's team that I've heard so far as an All-Star, so he could be an injury replacement kind of guy. And at least the Knicks have a few options if Randle's going to be missing some time. Most likely what happens is Josh Hart moves into the starting lineup. OG becomes the four. Seems reasonable to me. They could start Precious Achiuwa alongside Isaiah Hartenstein for a big boys kind of lineup. Or maybe Quentin Grimes gets the start for shooting. I think it would probably be Hart since he was the guy that Tom Thibodeau loved until OG Anunoby showed up. But hopefully it's not too long of an injury for Randle, and hopefully we hear the results pretty soon. But I don't know. Those kind of injuries can be anything. It could be, you know, he could be out for a couple of weeks, or it could be a Ja Morant and suddenly he has to have surgery and he's done for the season. We don't know.
Yeah, hopefully not that for Knicks fans. That would be brutal. This guy's averaging 24-9-5. You're right. He should be announced to another All-Star game. Whether he can play or not, we'll find out with the MRI. I saw, you know, some of your Twitter doctor saying an injury like this. You're right, Trey. It's like, it could be 3, 4, 5 weeks, something like that, on best case scenario possibly. So he probably is going to miss the game. I just hope he's announced as still an All-Star with Jalen Brunson, and then there'll be an injury replacement. But man, this guy, because this guy's like an Iron Man. This guy plays through a lot of injuries. I know Tibbs talked about that, like whatever sort of ankle or wrist, like he sucks it up and he plays. And you look at the games he's played, it's like, holy yeah, he does.
Yep.
But this is an injury too severe where he'll be out for a little bit, I think, here, and we'll see if the Knicks can manage.
Shams just tweeted, sources, Knicks star Julius Randle is expected to be sidelined for at least a few weeks with a right shoulder dislocation. Yeah. Appears to be a sigh of relief for New York as initial reviews of MRI reveal no significant damage. So probably hurts a ton.
Yep.
It does. It must hurt him for him to sit because he does play in every single game. He's played in every game this season.
Yeah.
And the only time he sits is when he's truly injured. And I know Knicks fans were waiting by the tweeters for every minute after that Saturday game. The more silence it felt like, the more it felt like something significant is going to happen. But for that news, it's fantastic. Other than few weeks here, and probably the All-Star game, I imagine, that he'll miss just because of the time. Allow him to rest. There's days after the All-Star game. So it'd be a few weeks without Julius Randle, and you are right about the New York Knicks. They got depth. So they will miss barreling Julius going in and trying to score. But they're damn good. So this is probably a good sign and a good tweet and a good diagnosis from the docs.
Will we see him? I'll probably see him, honestly, not till March, I would think here. With the All-Star break and all that, that's good. There's like time off there for everybody. I mean, they get sort of half a week or some teams even more. Depends if you're there.
There's 29 days in February this year. So, yeah, it's long.
Jeez, I thought January was long.
Yeah, I know. But I just wanted to get that through to everybody because there are 31 days in January. I know we get confused here on the desk. How many days are in each month? There's 60 combined in the first two, 31 and 29. Wow. Cool.
Well, at least Tyrese Halliburton gets a birthday. That's good.
He gets a birthday.
Yeah, he's a,
he's a leap guy.
Oh, he's a leap year guy. Yeah.
So we got the 29, right?
That's great.
Okay, so Julius Randle and just Knicks fans, that's an unfortunate one there with his injury. What do you have for a loser of the weekend?
Well, Saturday night, Joel Embiid was supposed to play against Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets here in NBA Rivalry Week, which was going extremely well. There was some great games. We had the Suns-Mavericks scrap earlier on in the week. They hated each other. Kings-Warriors, Warriors-Lakers, Hawks-Mavericks. I guess that's a rivalry. Trey versus Doncic. I mean, why not? Thunder-Spurs, 1-2 in the rookie race there. But unfortunately in this one, as he was supposed to play, he was called out right before the game.
Yeah.
He wasn't on the official injury report that the team needs to report. And they reported 24 hours before the game to ESPN, Joel Embiid's not on there. So they assumed, obviously, he was going to play. Nuggets fans were chanting, "Where Embiid at? Where Embiid at?" I get it. He put up 41 versus Denver recently. He just put up 70 even more recently. And then you don't see him out there. Why? Why does that happen? Obviously, the rule was put in this year to see guys play on nationally TV broadcast games and to have the stars out there. And he wasn't. I wonder if he pondered this one going up against Jokic, where he just looked so damn good scoring 41 in a win against them, and said, well, Tyrese Maxey isn't playing. Tobias Harris isn't playing for us. Might be a good game for me to sit, even though it's not a back-to-back by any means. So people just ridiculing Joel Embiid for that. Mm-hmm. He's missed 11 games. Part of those new rules are you got to miss more road games than home games. More home games than road games to be a little bit more balanced, because if you go on the road, we expect you to play. Well, he's missed 11 games overall. 9 of those have been on the road. So yeah, he's breaking the rules or whatever. How do you guys feel about this? Amongst all these games that were nationally televised, this was the only one where a star really missed a game.
Well, and the crazy part, like you said, is we thought he was playing, and he was playing up until like 60 minutes before the game, and suddenly the Woj tweet comes through, and he's a late scratch, and it's like, what? Not again. Come on. What's going on here? Because he hasn't played in Denver since 2019 at this point. They only go once a year, so there's not many games. And I get it. Some of the other times, he actually was injured on the schedule when they were playing in Denver, so that's a bit of a built-in excuse. But now here, we've had a few games where it's a straight-up, it's a rest. That's what it is. So it's is he just trolling at this point? It feels like it to me, that him and the Sixers organization are like, no, you just keep bringing this up, but we're not going to play. I'm not playing against him in Denver. I don't get it. I mean, it's disappointing because the league sells this. It was on the list of like their number one game, rival week, Jokic and B, the guy that wins all the MVPs, these two, and then they don't even play because he's not there. So that's, they market this league and these games on players. And that's why they want these star players to play.
Yeah, super disappointing and just a bad look for Embiid. I'm not doubting it at all that he was hurt, because he like was gimpy against the Pacers. But he also played like 30-something minutes that night, was giving all indications that he was going to be playing against Jokic. Even Nick Nurse in pregame was saying, yeah, he's playing tonight. Mm. Maybe the altitude was swelling his knees, perhaps. That can have some effect on recovery, certainly. But the fact that he wasn't on the injury report ahead of time is the weird part of it. Like, he tweaks his knee against the Pacers. Just throw him down as probable. Throw him down as questionable, whatever you're going to call it. At least there's then, like, breadcrumbs leading to him potentially missing the game, because everybody just wants to see this guy play against Jokic, and we want to see it happen in Denver because Embiid has handed it to Jokic the last two times they've played, but they've both been in Philadelphia.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess we got to wait till the finals.
I really want a finals matchup where Embiid doesn't play in Denver between the Nuggets and the Sixers. He really is committed to this bit that he will not play in Denver, and the Sixers better hope they have home court advantage in a potential finals matchup. It's so weird.
Yeah, and I wonder if the Philadelphia 76ers are fined. I suppose there is a chance.
Because they might be here.
Yeah, because they just didn't have any evidence that he was injured. The injury report, really what it comes down to, so they don't have to market games the same way if they realize that this game is not on national TV with their star. So yeah, there very well could happen that Embiid and his team get fined, although he's been awesome. He has been awesome, and his knee was bothering him. He has missed games this season because of that knee. And like you said, he did injure it a little bit in the Pacers game, in their previous game, but he didn't have to play back-to-back, and there's a reason for that, because the league wants national TV games without this back-to-back holding guys back. And not putting them out there.
I love the NBA having to pivot quickly because, you know, every matchups, star player versus star player, their headshots, Jokic, Embiid. Oh, Embiid's not playing. Oh, yeah, Maxey's not playing. Oh, crap. All right, throw Kelly Oubre Jr.'s face in there. That's what the matchup was. You know, a marquee game on ABC. it's a bad look. And just like you said, Trey, like, if we had known a little bit more, maybe that he was questionable, probable, and he's banged up, maybe people don't freak out as much. They still would have gone nuts, but...
Oh, yeah.
you know, he was playing. We were making our lists. Rivals Week, NBA had it. Everybody thought he was playing. He told Jokic after they played in Philly, see you in 2 weeks. You know, it's like...
He did see him. He was out there.
Yeah.
He did shake his hand with a puffy vest on.
Didn't see him in a jersey.
Didn't see him in a jersey. But I wonder how much Maxey's absence played a part into Embiid thinking, all right, this is a good game to take off. Also, Toby's not playing.
It's literally the worst game for him to take off if he cares at all about public sentiment and the league's reaction to it. It's the worst game to take off.
But he's done it in the past, and guess what? He won an MVP.
Not going to win. I mean, unfortunately, he's not even going to have a chance to win one again here because it's now looking very likely that he's going to come up short in the games played department, which means
like
he won't be an All-NBA. He will not be an MVP. It's going to be so weird.
It's going to be
that
very
the guy
weird,
might
man.
Finish the season 35 points a game and 12 boards, whatever, and he will be not on this if he misses a couple more, right? Because he's getting really close.
Yeah, he's got to miss 7 more. Then he'll miss it.
I thought it was even less now at this point.
No, it's 7.
No, 7? Okay. He's got a window.
If he misses 6, games. He's cool.
Yeah. He's missed 11 games.
Yeah, okay. You got to miss 18, then you're out.
Right. My weekend loser, the Phoenix Suns' fourth quarter play. Yes. They entered the weekend on a 7-game win streak, Phoenix did. And then we saw, this weekend alone, Devin Booker go for 62 against the Pacers. Then he had 44 versus the Magic. But Phoenix, including Booker, really, they went ice cold in the final 12 minutes of both games. Phoenix scored a combined 30 points over the weekend in those two losses in the fourth quarters. You know, they had a 13 fourth quarter and they had a 17 point fourth quarter. Sunday's loss, I thought, was specifically jarring, I guess. Phoenix went about 8 minutes between field goals in the fourth quarter against the Magic. Now, the Magic's defense, credit to them, they got all this length out there. They made it tough as the game went on for Phoenix. But Phoenix shot 5 of 18, 7 turnovers in a 13-point fourth quarter. And, I mean, Booker did his part for a majority of the game and really just got little contributions from anyone else. Bradley Beal just couldn't stop messing with his mask. Like completely taken out of the game because of this mask that was falling off, didn't fit. And then Durant, just 12 shots for KD. He had 7 of the Suns, like 20-plus turnovers in this game. Bad, bad stuff from him. But, Suns going ice cold in those two fourth quarters. And, again, they were coming in hot, hottest team in the league, and back-to-back L's.
Booker is hot. He's averaging 50 points the last 3 games while Kevin Durant is missing.
Whoa.
He can't. This is a joke, obviously, Kevin Durant. You can do whatever you want out there. You're a freaking master. You're one of the best scorers ever. He's averaging about 15 and a half over the last three games. Doesn't look like Kevin Durant. So it just looks strange for the Phoenix Suns when it comes down to the fourth quarter and you've got all these talented players who can score, and they have for a long time.
Any thoughts on Phoenix here?
Yeah, they got completely outplayed by the Magic, who are not a good offensive team in their own right, though, you know, it looks at least a little bit better when Franz is back alongside Paolo, but 5 for 18 in the fourth quarter for the Suns versus 10 for 23 in the fourth quarter for the Magic. That's not a team that should be outshooting a team built around their offense like the Suns are, but the Suns have just been kind of a middling team in the fourth quarter here for the entirety of the season. 13 and 13 in clutch situations. They're like in the bottom 5 of the league in field goal percentage in the fourth quarter because everybody knows what's coming. It's going to be an ISO for either Durant or for Booker. Maybe it'll be a kick out if you end up double teaming them. But that kind of comes down to, are they going to be able to make tough twos? And that's just how it's going to be for the Suns. That's how they were able to take a couple of games off the Nuggets in the playoffs last year, hitting a lot of tough pull-up jumpers, mm-hmm. but that's a risky way to live when another team can just shoot you out of the game with threes. So I don't know if things will change for the Suns, but if they have hot shooting nights, they're impossible to beat. If they have bad shooting nights, quite beatable.
Yeah, they hit 4 three-pointers in this game against the Magic, and they only shot 14. That's
not a lot.
Incredibly low for a team with a bunch of shooters, you're right. And again, like, I want to give credit to like Isaac and Wagner and Powell. Like, they're big guys. That's a huge team they can put up there. And then you got Suggs obviously doing his part defensively. So they are good. And they had a game plan you could sense. Like, yeah, run them off the line. Get them attacking. And there's no Nurkic. It changes things, honestly, for Phoenix. But still, to only go 4-14, it's going to be tough to win game in today's NBA for sure. All right, we got to take one more break. When we come back, tweet of the night.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, JD, let's wrap up this bad boy by going a little tweet of the night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, simple tweet. Because it's a pick from Trey Kirby, who saw Dylan Brooks wearing a gigantic winter hat over the weekend. And Trey just wrote, "Look at this hat!" And Trey, could you explain, maybe paint the picture for our podcast listeners, what this hat looks like?
Okay. What if you took a trapper hat and gigantified it as if you were buying it from a Six Flags amusement park?
Right.
It's just a standard trapper hat given to all Canadians at birth. But they gave Dylan Brooks the biggest one they could possibly find. It looks like it's at least a foot tall on the top. People are saying he outdid Melo with this one.
Yeah, people have compared it to, this is like the big noggin version of the trapper hat.
The noggin boss is branching out. Huh?
Yeah, maybe.
He looks warm.
Yeah.
It looks very warm. And Tass, did you have one of these hats back up in the Great White North?
No, I didn't. Did you Canadians
no,
have one?
I feel like JD has one of these.
One.
Yeah, you do.
Got it upstairs.
Oh, yeah,
that's cool.
It's not as big.
Not as big.
Were you wearing not as big as this, but were you wearing a hat in the infamous photo of us recording a podcast in like a shipping container at All-Star Weekend, very cold weather?
I definitely had a hat. It might have been that hat.
I think
actually.
You did.
It's,
yeah.
It's black trapper hat.
Yeah. I think you did. Remember how cold it was in that?
I was not cold. My head was perfect. Boiling in that hat.
You were here down here in the South?
No, I haven't had an opportunity. I may actually bring it to Indy.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, I don't think of that as a Canadian hat. I think of that more as a Russian hat. The Russians, it's cold there. They like to sport it. But Dylan Brooks, he's going for a look in every single photo that he takes. Go look at his profile photo on Basketball Reference. He's got his head tilted down just a little bit, so his eyes are looking at you like he looks like a character from a horror movie. He really does. He's going for it. He's looking deep into your soul. Dylan's trying to be a guy.
He's also, I mean, not that long ago, he showed up once looking like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah.
He showed up once in overalls and a bucket hat with the no undershirt. Last April, he was on the bench, and I saw people comparing him to Ice-T characters in the Play a Haters Ball from the Chappelle Show. Do you remember that look? Sort of like, almost like vampire vibes to him a little bit because the hair was down. Yeah, he tries everything. So.
Yeah, and he put on a huge chain under this trap hat too. Like, that's a monstrous change.
Is that
change.
The big DB one that he...
Mm-hmm. Big no, no.
Doris Burke fan.
Big Doris.
He's got, I know he's got a giant blinged out DB for obviously his initials.
Nah, it looks like it's from a bike. You know, it's one of those standard like...
What about a bike? You know, what do you mean?
You know,
like a chain on a bike? A
chain, yeah. No, chain,
oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Bike chain, yeah. Well, grease it, baby.
Do you think you could give him some of your garage door opener grease?
Oh, yeah. I brought it for you, Trey. I still have it.
Oh, man. That's big time.
I don't know if it works, but
oh, it's
it
not,
greases.
Well, you should. Does it work on
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I mean, it's grease.
So it does work. I don't understand.
He just hasn't opened his garage
yeah.
since he's
oh,
done
yeah,
it.
No,
well,
no,
that's
no.
what I'm asking.
I do. It still greases. I just wondered, like, I took the time to do it. It still sounds like it's a little dry.
Oh.
Maybe I should have sprayed it more.
Up more. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm only in it for the noise.
He's getting
yeah,
me too.
Yeah, it's so squeaky.
Just a little bit.
You think your neighbors are upset?
No, my neighbor's deaf.
No. Okay.
He's very old. He's fine with it, though.
Okay. Cool. All right. Let's call it there. We got a game to call tonight, guys. Yeah. We got the Ontario Clippers versus the College Park Skyhawks, and they have put us in charge of the broadcast. What could possibly go wrong? 7 p.m. tonight. If you're in Atlanta, Peachtree TV, you can catch the game on there. I think you can go to cpskyhawks.com. I'm trying to figure out if, like, somewhere around the world can catch it live. Do they broadcast these games to like G League's YouTube page?
NBAGLeague.com, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
You can watch it as well.
Okay, there you go. Go check that out, NBAGLeague.com, to see if you can watch your boys on the call tonight. 7 p.m. here in College Park in Atlanta. Can't wait for that. And we're heading down a little early to record some fun things that'll probably make the broadcast as well. But please, if you haven't done so, consider donating to a really good cause. $20 donation sends kids to a future G League game here in Atlanta, and that's sort of part of the reason we're doing this. So thanks everybody that has and or will. We'll be talking about that game, I'm sure, on tomorrow's podcast. Lots of NBA games on tonight, so we'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, good sign for Doc Rivers as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks here, because the first game that Giannis remembers watching in the NBA was the Celtics-Lakers Finals in 2008, watching his man Doc win it all. I had no idea. Now you know.
Brace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.